Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Thank you so much, Vivian, for this general introduction. And thank you to SILRAP and Nuremberg Academy for this wonderful event. It's extremely nice for me to be here also because I did my PhD here and I love Florence very much. So it's a great honor for me to speak here today in Florence. The title of my today's presentation is Symbolic Expression at the International Criminal Tribunal for the Former Yugoslavia. So this is part of a bigger project. I'm working on a book called Symbolism of International Criminal Law. And in this book, I'm arguing that international criminal law is symbolic in the sense that it denotes international consensus on certain values. It denotes our consensus on prohibited conduct, on upholding human dignity, and so on. So international criminal law is symbolic. So in this particular presentation, I'm going to focus on a case study on a particular tribunal, that is the ICTY, and I will try to show you how, in which way, the symbolic mission of international criminal justice comes through in the work of this particular tribunal. But I would like to start with an image which comes from the Divine Comedy. Since we're in Florence, I thought that would be appropriate. It's a Circus of Hell in Dante's Divine Comedy. And if we go to the seventh circle of Hell, it contains murderers. And Dante distinguished between different types of murderers, between those who are guilty of individual murders and those he called tyrants or mass murderers, those who are responsible for the death of many individuals. And the punishment for these two categories was different. The individual murderers, they stood in the boiling blood just with their feet. That was their punishment, and mass murderers were in the boiling blood up to their eyebrows. So their punishment was more severe. So that was in Dante's time, the recognition that tyrants and mass murderers deserve greater reprobation. But it is not until Nuremberg and Tokyo that this idea received formal legal recognition in international criminal law. And moving on to symbolism of international criminal law in the expression of the Yugoslavia Tribunal. I decided to choose this particular case study partially based on my own personal interest. I was a visiting fellow at the Central European University last year, and Central European University Institute holds archives of the commission of experts who prepared groundwork for the ICTY. So I used my opportunity there to go into archives and look at the groundwork that preceded the creation of the ICTY. So there are four ways, I argue, in which the symbolic objective of international criminal law comes through or manifests itself in the work of the Yugoslavia Tribunal. That is through the process of its establishment, through its institutional design, through the rhetoric in the judgments, and through the way in which the tribunal frames its failures and achievements. Oops, sorry. In my paper, I use two theoretical frameworks. One framework relates to the output of the tribunal, that is to say the content that is generated by the tribunal. That includes the decisions, the judgments, and also the documents leading to the creation of the ICTY. And then the second framework applies to the institutional design, to the way, to the structure within which this content is generated. When I talk about the content itself, I use the theory of discourse analysis by Michel Foucault. It appeals to me that Foucault perceived of the world not as a sequence of historical events, but rather as discursive spaces within which there are statements that are able to move our discourse in one direction or another. I think this type of thinking applies a lot to the work of international criminal courts and tribunals, because decisions and judgments go beyond individual cases. They have the potential of framing and stirring our discourse in one direction or another. If we talk about criminalizing rape in war, that would be just one example of how international criminal law can stir direction in can stir our discourse in a certain direction. Then if we talk about the structure within which this content is generated, and I think it was mentioned before, I see criminal trials as some form of symbolic rituals. And I use anthropological literature to support my claim. In particular, I rely on the work of Maurice Bloch. There is an anthropologist in the room, perhaps they know his work. Maurice Bloch was an anthropologist who studied religious rituals in different societies. And he came to the conclusion that there is something uniting different religious rituals, and that is the desire of individuals to connect to some permanent structures that go beyond biological existence of humans, to connect to values that go beyond our existence. That is good and evil, or religion, or some other bigger values. And I believe that international criminal law and international trials are actually a ways of connecting to our shared humanity in that way. Moving on to the four ways in which symbolic objective manifests itself through the work of the ICTY. Firstly, it is through the process of its establishment. The ICTY was established in 1993, and its establishment was preceded by the work of the Commission of Experts tasked with exploring and investigating violations of humanitarian law in the former Yugoslavia. This commission was chaired by late Sherif Bassioni, and you can see on the left-hand side a page from the report prepared by Sherif Bassioni and his team. You can see how much work was put in this report. It was many, many thousand pages and many annexes. And the report and the work of the Commission of Experts was to conduct investigations. It was also to cooperate with the government, but there was no direct objective to set up the tribunal. Setting up the tribunal was a consequence of this work. It is interesting that the work of the Commission of Experts actually defined the avenues for the development of international criminal law. For instance, it was Professor Bassioni who decided to identify rape as one of the pilot studies in his work, and he conducted a lot of investigations and flagged this particular instance for the work of potential court to come. And indeed, the ICTY developed law on sexual violence. On the right-hand side, you can see a slide or a picture of the annex dedicated to the siege of Sarajevo. What is shocking was that the Commission of Experts was tasked with investigating the siege of Sarajevo while it was still ongoing. So on this particular page, you cannot see very well, but you can see daily casualties from the siege of Sarajevo. At the time when the Commission of Experts was working, there were more than 10,000 people dead, and Sarajevo was still under siege. And this kind of representation creates a very strong emotional impetus for the Security Council later on to decide to create a court. So this is these are the casualties. So the second way in which the symbolic objective manifests itself in the work of the Yugoslavia Tribunal is its institutional design, how it was designed. Firstly, it was designed as a court. It was not designed as a Truth or Reconciliation Commission or any other forum. The court, I would argue, is the strongest possible forum for condemnation. It is a space for contestation and attribution of individual criminal responsibility. It is how the international community decided to expunge evil, so-called, to get rid of the evil through the symbolic ritual of a criminal trial. And the works of contemporaries, for example, David Sheffer, tell us that it was not certain that the court would be created. It was something that was debated. And it was a genuine outrage of international community that led to the creation of the court. The other element is the expediency with which the ICTY was created. It was created quite fast. The Commission of Experts that I mentioned before issued its interim report in February 1993. 5 days later, the Security Council decided to move forward with the creation of the tribunal. And 3 months later, in May, the statute of the ICTY was adopted. That was very fast. creation, and it is interesting that the statute of the ICTY was barely redacted or barely updated because of the urgency of the situation. The atrocities were ongoing in the Balkans. And that connects to the third point, a consensus that emerged around the creation of the Yugoslavia Tribunal. Such consensus perhaps would not have been possible now, but at the time of the creation of the ICTY, all the members of the Security Council were in favor of creating this kind of tribunal. So the moment of consensus was very evident at that point. And final point, which is a bit more provocative, it's the permanence of this institution. You would say it's not permanent. ICTY has its temporal jurisdiction starting in 1991 and ending in December 2017. So the ICTY is closing its doors very soon. But I would argue that in a broader sense, the institution is permanent because there is a mechanism for international tribunals that will inherit most of the functions of the ICTY, and we also, of course, have a successor court, the ICC. So the project of the ICTY is actually still living and continuing in the work of the MCT and also the ICC. Now, the third way in which the symbolic objective manifests itself in the work of the Yugoslavia Tribunal is through judicial rhetoric. And here I face the question, how do I prove that? How do I go about showing symbolic objective using judicial rhetoric? And I decided to do a word search of terms which I think reflect the symbolic objective of international criminal justice. Now I have to make a footnote, these are the subjective terms that I used, and the main reason for this exercise is to understand within which context these strong, powerful, emotive expressions are used. So I searched the words like condemnation, condemning, humankind, humanity as a whole, on behalf of the international community, repugnant, ritual. So emotive words, words that can bring about the context which we need to understand. And as you can see, there have not been so many occurrences in the work of the ICTY. I searched both the judgments and the decisions starting from the beginning of the ICTY and up until 2017. And there have been only 54 times that the word condemnation has been used. And that is given that there were more than 100 judgments at the ICTY and also many, many thousand pages of legal writing. I explain this by the nature of judicial function and the principles of legality and the limits on judges and limits on creativity of judges. So when I look at the context within which these words have been used, I identified four different types of context within which they were used. So firstly, condemnation, humankind, a strong emotive language was used in the context of sentencing. And Kessler already referred to the work of Durkheim, and indeed Durkheim argued that punishment is perhaps the strongest and the most emotive part of criminal justice process. It's a passionate reaction graduated in its intensity. So this kind of finding that the words condemnation and humankind are frequently used in the course of sentencing support this idea that sentencing is the most emotional part of a criminal trial. The other element is the definition of crimes. This is where these words are used very often in defining crimes. Then when the judges wanted to underline their association with international community, they would resort to this strong emotive language. And then finally, when the judges issued their separate and dissenting opinions, they would be more free to use emotive language and show how they understand their own function. Just a few citations. If we talk about sentencing, there is a citation from Aleksovsky, which I wanted to read out, just to show how these words are embedded in the context. Accordingly, a sentence of the International Tribunal should make plain the condemnation of the international community of the behavior in question and showed that the international community was not ready to tolerate serious violations of international humanitarian law and human rights. So condemnation, strong condemnation in sentencing. If we talk about the definition of crimes, this is arguably one of the biggest achievements of the Yugoslavia Tribunal, that is the development of the body of substantive law. And in many cases, I argue that the symbolic objective of the ICTY was the impetus for the development of substantive body of law. So whenever there existed lacuna in law, the judges actually resorted to the overarching symbolic mission of the tribunal. For example, in Celibici, one of the earlier judgments of the ICTY, the judges said, on the strength of this almost universal condemnation of the practice of inhumane treatment, it can be said that its prohibition is a norm of customary international law. So this is criminalization of inhumane treatment and resorting to this kind of emotive language of condemnation. The same in Bralo, that has to do with rape and torture. Frequent occurrences when it comes to the definition of the crimes against humanity. And I argue that part of the reason is because crimes against humanity were not criminalized in the treaty and therefore left certain opening for further development. I will not talk about association with international community, but we'll go straight to the fourth context within which the emotional language or this strong symbolic language was used. And that is the dissenting and separate opinions of judges. We already talked this morning about Judge Miron, and the first two citations come actually from the interview that was conducted by one of the scholars with these two judges. And both of them mentioned that they see their primary task as doing justice and punishing atrocities, so more of a narrow vision of criminal function. And when I did a word search of their dissenting and separate opinions, it actually, this kind of position comes through in these opinions. For example, in the Galic appeals decision, both Judge Miron and Judge Pokar did not support raising the final sentence of the accused in the appeals decision, because Galic was sentenced for the shelling of Sarajevo initially to 20 years of imprisonment, and then the appeals chamber increased his sentence to life imprisonment. And both Judge Pokar and Judge Miron dissented because they thought that this violates the rights of the defense, broadly speaking. While Judge Shahabuddin, in the same opinion, actually focused on the on the rights of victims and the function of the court to reflect public condemnation for offenses of this kind. So in that way, we can see how judges approach their own function and how they approach, in general, the mission of the Yugoslavia Tribunal. And I go to my last point right now, and last point of the presentation. The final way in which the symbolic mission of the Yugoslavia Tribunal manifests itself is through the way in which the tribunal frames its achievements and failures. So on the website of the ICTY, we can see a list of achievements of the tribunal, and they're not confined to just ruling on guilt or innocence of individuals. The achievements are framed in a much broader way, that is development of the rule of law, uncovering the truth, also bringing reconciliation to the region, et cetera, setting the historical narrative. So the way in which the tribunal and also the scholarly circles talk about the ICTY is much broader than just a criminal trial. And that links to the overarching expectation of international criminal justice to deliver on universal values. And I could not avoid including the recent statistics. It was discussed by Marko Milanović in 2016 in two articles, where he looked at opinion polls in the Balkans, and he tried to understand whether the objectives and the achievements that the ICTY lists on its website, especially the objective of reconciliation and uncovering truth, have been achieved. And he uncovered very interesting results. Around 50% of the population in Serbia in 2011 believe that Srebrenica happened, and the other 50% do not believe that Srebrenica happened. And one third of the population consider it to be a crime. which just shows that not all of the achievements are yet achieved. So perhaps with time, with education, there will be more work on outreach and overcoming the cognitive biases of individuals and people in the region. But so far, we have not achieved all the objectives. And this concludes my presentation. I would like to thank you for your patience, and I'm open to questions later. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.